the 60s, the lower 60s as a low and the 80s as a high. Let's look at some temperatures around the state this hour. In DeKalb, sunny and 66 degrees. It's mostly sunny in northeast Illinois right now. At Chicago Midway Airport, it's 64. At Joliet, it is sunny and 67 right now. Waukegan, sunny and 62. In west central, we're seeing some clouds coming in. It's mostly sunny right now in Galesburg, but it is 67 degrees and a little bit cloudy in Macomb and 70. Right now in Bloomington, Illinois, sunny and 71. Decatur, 73, and mostly sunny in Peoria this hour, 70 degrees. Champaign, it is partly sunny at Willard Airport. Rantoul, mostly sunny at 72, though we are seeing some clouds rolling in throughout the afternoon. And right now it's 73 degrees at Friends Plaza in Urbana, overcast with a chance of rain later this afternoon. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
Author Judy Blum amassed adoring fans with stories about real kids and their families.
I think that all those kids who grew up on my books think that I must have been the world's greatest parent, and of course I wasn't. I was as imperfect as any parent.
Judy Blum talks about parenting, writing, and her first movie adaptation today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine here on WILL. Well, another credit agency is downgrading Illinois after its lawmakers ended their session last week without addressing the state's $100 billion pension liability crisis. So now, Governor Pat Quinn is calling the General Assembly back into session for an unprecedented emergency meeting. NPR's David Shaper reports.
Illinois owes the pension funds for public employees just a massive amount of money.
It's at least $100 billion, and it grows by $17 million every day.
That's Madeline Dubeck with Reboot Illinois, a nonpartisan digital and social media effort to engage citizens in solving state government woes. And Dubeck blames state lawmakers.
Their inaction was the equivalent of tying a 32,000-pound weight around the neck of every taxpayer in Illinois.
$32,000 is what Dubeck says every Illinois taxpayer would have to shell out to cover the pension shortfall and pay off a backlog of bills. Moody's cites the legislature's political paralysis in downgrading Illinois' credit rating, and that prompted Governor Pat Quinn to call a special legislative session to begin June 19th.
This is an alarm bell for the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, all the members of the legislature to come together and get the job done. The job is put a bill on my desk so I can sign it into law.
But Illinois' House and Senate, both controlled by Quinn's fellow Democrats, have very different pension reform plans with no compromise in sight. David Shaper, NPR News, Chicago.
There's significance between the choice of California as the venue for the U.S.-China summit between Presidents Barack Obama and Xi Jinping. The state is home to more than a third of the Chinese-born population in the United States, and Chinese-backed investment groups have been pouring billions of dollars into real estate property and private companies based on the West Coast. But at the same time, exports of California goods to China are surging, and state leaders are bullish about capitalizing on new markets there. Kirk Siegler has this story about two places that are very different but have more and more in common.
China sells well over $100 billion worth of goods in California every year, and California exports more services and products to China than any other U.S. state. Last year alone, it was $22 billion worth of tech products, entertainment, and food. In fact, this state is full of tales about Chinese investors carting around loads of cash.
There's stories out there, anecdotal, but stories nevertheless, of Chinese businessmen just showing up at a nut farm or a winery and then putting down a briefcase of $100 bills and buying everything. Just give it to me. And they put it in containers and ship it back.
Economist Christopher Thornburg is with the LA-based Beacon Economics. Those shipping containers Thornburg mentioned aren't anecdotal. California's huge ports and its easy access to Asian markets is a big reason why trade with China is booming. And Thornburg says that's likely to continue as California's relationship with China becomes more like the U.S.'s relationship with, say, Canada.
It's tourism, it's imports and exports, it's investment.
billions of dollars of investment, in fact, by Chinese firms eager to buy up commercial real estate in cities like Los Angeles. Some of it has been high profile, the Marriott Hotel downtown, the Sheraton in Universal City, but a lot has been more under the radar, an office park here, apartment complex there.
We're really busy.
Eddie Chow was at an Asian business mixer this week. The presidential summit was very much on the minds of attendees as they sipped gin and tonics and pints of beer at this Tony Bar in Beverly Hills. Chow handles real estate transactions for Chinese investors eager to get a foot in the U.S. market. He says they feel especially at home in Southern California.
Because, you know, it's like a dirt back home. You know, you see all the stores, you see all the restaurants, and all kinds of, you know, the authentic Chinese food, the signage, everything. I think that makes them feel much more comfortable.
Much of this local real estate boom has been taking place in the suburbs east of downtown L.A., home to tens of thousands of Chinese Americans. Chinese immigration to California is nothing new, but the diaspora that began in earnest with the railroads has gotten a shot in the arm lately. There's the real estate, the lure of Silicon Valley, and interest by Chinese families in California's universities. Even as diplomatic relations have been a bit testy between the two countries, California politicians have seemed bullish for China business. In April, Governor Jerry Brown opened the state's first foreign trade office in more than a decade in Shanghai.
We want to invest in China, we want to sell to China, and we want China to sell to California and invest in California.
All of this boosterism hasn't been without some tensions, especially in Hollywood over piracy issues. California politicians also routinely scorn China's environmental record. But it's the economic and cultural ties between China and California that will provide a backdrop for this summit. And the sunshine and palm trees, something Cindy Fan, Vice Provost of International Studies at UCLA, says is a good fit for President Xi's style.
Which is one that is more laid back and less ceremonial. So I think it's very smart for President Obama to be really going with the flow and pick a location in which Xi Jinping can also continue to extend his style of leadership in a meeting with President Obama.
And what better place to be laid back and go with the flow than California? Kirk Sigler, NPR News.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL. The new movie, The Internship, is opening today and tells the story of two 40-year-old down-on-their-luck watch salesmen, played by Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, who land an unlikely summer internship at Google after everything goes badly in their lives, and it's all kind of outlandish. Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson are starring in it, and NPR's Steve Henn sat through a screening with some real-life Google interns.
Software engineering interns at Google earn an average of $6,500 a month. So it's no wonder that Vince Vaughn's character in this film sees Google and an internship as salvation.
Vic, I got it. Google.
You got us a job at Google?
Not a job. It's an interview for an internship that could lead to a job.
Google's ubiquitous free food, its campus volleyball court, and quirky culture are all on full display in the film. I sat through a screening in a room packed with real Google interns. They sat there cheering, many wearing brightly colored Google beanies. These people actually refer to each other as Nooglers, Google's corporate shorthand for new Googlers. And like Kyle Ewing, who runs the global internship program at Google, most seem to like this movie's depiction of the company as a kind of brightly colored workplace nirvana.
I loved it.
In real life, Google's campus can feel like a trip to Oz. Interns here are greeted with a scavenger hunt.
And we'll get triple points if we're able to find a conference bike.
Do you know what a conference bike is?
I have no idea.
We'll find out.
Google's campus is full of odd stuff, like these conference bicycles. They're circular, multi-person contraptions that pedal. Then there are the self-driving cars and the freaky glasses. Ewing says it's not just the perks, the gadgets, and the gimmicks that draw applications.
Interns that we attract tend to want to tackle these giant, crazy problems.
Each year, Google receives close to 40,000 applications for 1,500 internship slots.
We are attracting some of the smartest, talented, most creative minds out there.
But sorting through all these candidates can be tough.
It's pretty challenging.
Chastity Wells is on Ewing's team.
Our interns go through a really extensive process, interviewing. The application isn't too bad.
And if you're one of the lucky 3 or 4% of applicants to land an internship, the work is real.
As an intern, I was actually in charge of determining the social media strategy for the film called Life in a Day.
Raymond Braun was a marketing intern at YouTube. Today, he's at YouTube full-time. And each year, the vast majority of new graduate hires at Google come directly from the internship program. Still, this company isn't completely cut off from the problems facing the rest of the world. Google, like many tech companies, struggles to hire a diverse engineering workforce.
It's our sort of audacious ambition to reflect our users, reflect the makeup of our users.
For years, though, Google has fought in court to prevent media organizations from gaining access to equal opportunity hiring data about the company. Ewing says Google's not ignoring this issue and is providing smaller educational internships.
We have other, you know, smaller intern programs focused on students maybe earlier in their college career. So there's the engineering practicum and the freshman engineering practicum. These are specifically targeted towards folks, again, historically underrepresented.
The largest of these targeted internship programs at Google is called Bold. Bold interns are not engineers, and they're recruited for jobs in other parts of the company. And perhaps because of that, their salaries are on average a little more than half of what the engineering interns can make. Nonetheless, a summer gig at Google's not bad, and the food is still free. Steve Henn, NPR News, Silicon Valley.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, June 7th, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota in 1954. She grew up in North Dakota, the eldest of seven children. Her father came from a family of German immigrants, and her mother was French Ojibwe. And both her parents taught in the school run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. She went on to Dartmouth, admitted to the first class that accepted women, and it was also the first year a Native American Studies department was formed. Her first novel, Love Medicine, was a bestseller and won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Love Medicine was made up of many different stories told by all kinds of people living in and around a fictional reservation outside the town of Argus, North Dakota. Her second novel, The Beet Queen, was set in the town of Argus and focused on the German-American population there. Since then, she has set most of her novels in the same fictional place, novels such as The Last Report on the Miracles at Little No Horse, The Master Butcher's Singing Club, and The Plague of Doves, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And it's the birthday of novelist Elizabeth Bowen, born in Dublin. She's known for writing about British upper-class society in novels such as The Death of the Heart and A World of Love. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote We Real Cool, We Left School, We Lurk Late, We Strike Straight. Gwendolyn Brooks, who was born in Topeka, Kansas in 1917, grew up on the south side of Chicago, and she began writing poems as a child and published her first poem at the age of 13. Her parents encouraged her literary ambitions and put her into contact with Langston Hughes, who encouraged her to keep writing. She published her second collection of poetry, Annie Allen, in 1949, and in it she used an experimental form that she called the sonnet ballad. Critics liked it, and a Times book reviewer praised her work as full of insight and wisdom and pity, technically dazzling. The next year, 1950, she became the first African American to win the Pulitzer Prize. She said about her poetry, "I wrote about what I saw and heard in the street. I lived in a small second-story apartment at the corner, and I could look first on one side and then the other. There was my material." And here's a poem by Ted Berrigan entitled Wishes. Now I wish I were asleep to see my dreams taking place. I wish I were more awake. I wish a sweet rush of tears to my eyes, wish a nose like an eagle. I wish blue sky in the afternoon, bigger windows and a panorama, light and buildings and people in the street air. Wish my teeth were white and sparkled. Wish my legs were not where they are, where they are. I wish the days warmly cool and clothes I like to be inside of. Wish I were walking around in Chelsea, New York, and it was 5:15 a.m. and the sun coming up alone, you asleep at home. I wish red rage came easier. I wish death, but not just now. I wish I were driving alone across America in a gold Cadillac toward California, and my best friend